Welcome to the Working at LSE podcast. I'm Vanessa Huang, and this episode will break down some of the themes covered in my article, where I interviewed academics that had left or were considering leaving academia. Today I'm joined by Lucas Lotus, an LSE 100 fellow, as well as anti-casualization officer at LSE's branch of the UCU, for a conversation on burnout in academia. Welcome to the podcast, Lucas. To start off, how prevalent would you say burnout is in academia?
I think lots of people in academia have kind of gotten used to spending a lot of time on their work. And the difficulty is obviously also that a lot of things we do in academia, it's kind of tricky to tell whether it's work or leisure or somewhere in between, because we enjoy parts of our work. And so I think burnout is very prevalent, it's very common, and that's in part because it's really difficult to set boundaries of kind of free time and work. And so it means that there's always kind of incentives to do more and to also kind of erode your spare time and those boundaries. And that, I think, lends itself really well to ending up with burnout, because you take on too much stuff and you might take on additional tasks that you think are interesting or even kind of fun or enjoyable, but it kind of becomes too much because there are also all these like kind of permanent pressures in your work. So I would say burnout is probably very common, unfortunately.
I'd like to talk about publishing. Could you explain the importance of getting published, especially for early career researchers, and how the culture around publishing can sometimes contribute to burnout?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question, because I think this is really the core of where the burnout might come from for lots of people. So publishing is obviously an absolutely essential part of what it means to make in academia. I mean, that's basically the thing that will make or break your career. And that's why we often use this term publish or perish, that it's like if you don't manage to publish, you will perish in academia. So just to start off to say that there are a few exceptions to this. So there are some universities, including LSE, who are setting up this kind of teaching track, basically, which is for academics who see themselves more as kind of teachers or lecturers or educationalists than researchers. So there are some exceptions to this, but for the vast majority of academics, publishing is really essential. And for early career researchers, it's the thing that will make or break your career. So what that means is that, I mean, the world of academic publishing is very kind of opaque and can be difficult to kind of understand from the outside. And I would say even when you're kind of at the beginning of your academic career, it's still very difficult to understand. But I think several decades ago, there was less pressure to publish early on in your career, whereas now that has really changed dramatically. So now you definitely can't get a kind of permanent job, sort of like a lectureship or assistant professorship, really without a significant amount of publications. I mean, this differs a lot from discipline to discipline, from field to field, but overall, it really is an overwhelming pressure. There's an overwhelming pressure to publish already during your PhD. And obviously, that means you can publish parts of your PhD. So it's not necessarily that you need to do kind of brand new research for it, but to take something from, you know, a chapter of a PhD or in some cases even a master's dissertation and turn it into a publishable piece of work takes a tremendous amount of additional work. So you can't just kind of, you know, copy paste it. And for early career academics, the problem as well is, of course, that a lot of us are in positions like in jobs where there's an immense pressure from the teaching side as well. So, you know, if the only thing we had to do was to publish, then that would be totally fine. You know, you could manage that. But the problem is when that runs up against the pressures on teaching and marking and all these other things that we have to do in our jobs, then the publishing just becomes this kind of additional thing. And for LSE, for example, you know, those of us who are employed as fellows, really the thing that they're hiring us for is the teaching. I think we can quite reasonably say we provide lots of teaching that's useful for the departments, and oftentimes many of us also come with a large amount of teaching experience and obviously teaching expertise. The research side is, it's weird because it's kind of seen as like an addition to that, but then it really is also the thing that keeps the whole system running. So there's just this tremendous pressure on us as individuals to constantly be publishing, and to be publishing in top journals, and to be publishing a lot, and to be publishing on the right topics. So yeah, this is really, I would say, a major pressure.
Right, and with the rise of hustle culture, obviously in academia, but across a lot of other sectors as well, there's been some pushback against that, with people encouraging others to separate work and personal life. You know, things like not checking your email outside of your work hours, delegating tasks to other people. Do you think there is much that can be done at the individual level for academics?
I think individuals can do something, and it can be important to set boundaries. But the problem is that it's really tricky to do that. So, I, for example, get lots of emails from students over the weekend, and that makes sense because for students, it, like university isn't really a night, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. And there's always this temptation to respond to emails like when you get them, even if that's on the weekend. And yeah, full disclaimer, I do check my emails on weekends, even though I shouldn't. And I certainly shouldn't respond to them. And so I do try and not respond to emails over week on the weekend, for example, or during evenings. So I do try and set expectations with students, for example, of like what, and one way of doing that is by also letting students know and understand what are the pressures that we're facing, right? So like what is the sheer number of, I mean, we have a large number of students that we're kind of, engaging with through our seminars and so on. And so one way I think of trying to set these boundaries is to basically communicate to everyone involved, like whether that's my boss or my students or my colleagues, like what are the kind of reasonable parameters here? But in practice, that's really difficult, right? Because everyone kind of expects lots of you, and the sum total is more than you can actually provide or offer. So I think it is really hard to set these boundaries, and it's precisely for the reasons that that I mentioned before, which is that work and leisure becomes really blurred. It's obvious that like marking a student essay is work. Like if I didn't, if that was optional, I wouldn't do it. But other things like writing papers or even just the act of reading, right? Like reading and doing research is work, but it might also be enjoyable work. And so it's like really tempting to take on more and to do additional things, and also to kind of, it's difficult to know how much you're meant to be doing also with publishing, right? It's like I could decide to spend, every single evening of the week trying to publish more. That seems unreasonable, right? I think everyone would agree that sounds unreasonable. But then the question is, it's really difficult to know when to stop. Like, when is it enough? When is it going to be just about enough for me to get my next job? When is it going to be just about enough for my contract to get renewed? Like, it's really difficult to know that because each individual person's situation is so different. And so you can't even really speak to people who have made, like, quote unquote, made it, because there's just so many idiosyncrasies and so many particularities from case to case that means it's really difficult to generalize. I would say it is possible to set some boundaries, and it's also possible to just to make certain choices, right? So you could say, I don't aspire to become a kind of top academic. I want to have a stable career in academia, but I don't need to be a star professor. I don't need to, be writing lots of books. And I know people like that who are kind of, they might get their first job in academia, and as long as they can continue having a job in academia and do their teaching and do it well and, publish once in a while, that might be all they, that might be what they've kind of decided to do. The problem, of course, is that if lots of academic jobs were kind of permanent, stable contracts, then that would be more realistic. But for lots of us, the system is designed in such a way at the moment that, we're constantly on the lookout for our next job and for knowing, where we're gonna get our next paycheck from. And so you can't really afford to do that. And I think that's a major source of the problem here, is that you can't really rest on your laurels. Like, even if you're at LSE and you've finished your PhD and you're kind of doing good, interesting research, and your teaching evaluations are really good, it just unfortunately is just still not enough at all. So it's really difficult to set these boundaries, I think, as an individual.
I also wanted to ask you about the REF, the Research Excellence Framework. In the 2021 set of results, 58% of LSE's research was deemed world-leading and 35% internationally excellent. And this was something LSE really enjoyed publicizing. At the same time, the UCU has previously called for the REF to be disbanded. So do you think these metrics that kind of try to measure and rank research contribute to this culture of overworking?
Absolutely. I mean, this is a central part of it, right? Is that you become quantified as an individual. And that means that universities have incentives to hire you or not to hire you based on how they might think that you will contribute to the REF. And the REF in itself has also just led to a massive, I would say, and this might be a little bit heretical, but to a massive overproduction of academic research, like published academic research. Because there is this weird quantification where it makes sense if you, let's say you've done a piece of research and you want to publish it as an article, if there's any way that you can try and, you know, split that thing into two pieces of text, right? If you can basically turn one piece of research into two journal articles instead of one, even if there's the same content in it, right? There's a huge incentive to do that, right? Because then that means that you'll have more publications. There'll be more publications that your department can submit to the REF. And that means, you know, that the research output of the institution, the research power will go up. And so it will look like that's a more research intensive institution. So the REF, I think, absolutely has had a detrimental impact on the work-life balance, the mental health, maybe even the physical health and the well-being for sure of academics. It creates a strange incentive structure where quantity is valued. Quality is obviously also a huge part of the REF, but quantity is important. And it also is just a tremendous amount of work to even run the REF. Like academics spend a huge amount of time doing the REF, right? Because it's not just all this pressure to publish the research, it's also that then, you know, the REF is run by academics, right? They have to review all this research then and evaluate it and put a star ranking on it. That takes up loads of time, right? It's like writing grants, doing the REF, submitting to journals. All of these things in a way seem to not be a core part of academia or of research, right? They're not actually contributing to knowledge or to the public discourse, but they've become a really kind of built-in or baked-in part of academia. And so academics spend a very small amount of their overall time on research, and I think the REF definitely has part of the blame for that. Other countries don't have a kind of REF equivalent. Some countries do, others don't. And I struggle to see how not having the REF would reduce the quality of research produced. I mean, I'm not sure if we can kind of establish a trend or a correlation here, but I just really don't see how it contributes. Now, there are parts of the REF that I think are interesting, like, for example, departments demonstrating what kind of impact their research has. Now, impact is often used in a very perverse way and pernicious way to kind of push academics to things that have like an immediate impact, like a really kind of short-term immediate impact. And in certain academic fields, that's just totally unrealistic and that's just not how it works, right? And it's like, if you do certain types of like research in physics, it might not be that it has an immediate impact, but it could down the line have a tremendous impact. Same thing in my field, political theory. It's not that like I publish a paper on political theory and suddenly everyone changes their mind about a certain topic. Right, it's a much more indirect and kind of circuitous and long-term intervention into public discourse, into the production of knowledge. So demonstrating impact in some fields is just way more difficult than it is in other fields. Like if you publish in social policy, it might be that you can literally send the publications to like select committees in the government and they will, or in parliament, and they will, you know, literally be citing your work. So the impact there seems much more obvious. Now, does that mean that that research is more important than the less directly impactful research? Well, I don't think so, but the REF really incentivizes certain types of research over others as well. And so basically what the REF does is it creates this totally artificial and to a large extent arbitrary measuring system of research that just becomes another kind of ranking that then also everyone is kind of adhering to the parameters of that system, right? So departments become obsessed with doing well in the ref rather than doing the thing that the ref is supposed to measure, which is, you know, high quality research and potentially also high quantities of research. And so you create this upside down system where everyone is trying to do the thing that the ref wants them to do rather than doing the thing that the ref is supposed to measure. So, you know, it's this classic case of kind of the measure becomes the target and the target becomes the measure. It's like, yeah, it really is quite baffling, I think. And it's I think it's really detrimental to academia and to kind of the well-being of academics.
I think we'll wrap up there for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Lucas.
No, thanks so much for having me.
And that's all for this episode. I hope you learned something new. Make sure to check out the article as well as the others in the series, all available at thebeaverlse.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.